Good morning. You're listening to the Conversations program, WDRT, here in Viroqua. My name is Mary Christensen. I'll be hosting today's show. And my guest today is Bjorn Bergman. And I'm expecting many of you know him, really, because Bjorn has been active, an active person, participant in our community for a number of years now. Although the last couple of years, he's kind of disappeared. I haven't seen him that much. And then this fall, maybe it was the last day of the farmer's market, I ran into him. I thought, Bjorn, where have you been? And what are you doing now? And anyway, that conversation led me to feeling like he would be a really fun guest to have here today. So, Bjorn, why don't you just begin with telling us about your background?
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me here today. It's fun to share. But yeah, before I came to Viroqua in 2009, I mainly grew up in the Twin Cities, the northern suburbs of Minneapolis, and, you know, mm-hmm. grew up a suburban life, didn't think about much. I always considered myself like an environmentalist, interested in preserving the environment in different ways. But I hadn't gone to college and kind of had my worldview expanded that much. And so I didn't really think much of it, like in terms of being an environmentalist. It was more like, oh, I may need to make sure that I recycle everything and whatnot. My mom had always been a gardener. She was a master gardener and had a vegetable garden, but I was like not interested in it at all. This will actually be a funny story. It's kind of like what started me on the path to being more interested in like food systems and whatnot. But it's a funny story, and I always like to tell it because it's kind of embarrassing. Those are always good for the radio. But in like high school, I always like considered myself like an avid meat eater, and my friend Liz was a vegetarian in high school, and she was a member of PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and whatnot. And she like was joking, and she wasn't really joking around one day, but she was like, "Let me sign you up for a vegetarian starter kit, and it will get sent to your house." And I was like, "Fine, do that. Like that won't be a problem. Like I'll still want to eat meat." It was back in, 2007? No, before that. So this was right before high school. So like 2003 or something like that. So I got like a CD in the mail that I had to put in my computer and like watch this video. And I remember watching it, and it was showing factory farming and confined animal feeding operations. And I couldn't like watch the whole movie. Like I wanted to throw up actually. And I was like, if I can't actually watch this, should I be participating in the food system in this way? And that's kind of what really led to a switch for me. For my 19th birthday, I became vegetarian because I didn't want to participate in the food system that I felt like I had access to at that time. I didn't know anything about food co-ops. I knew very little about cooking at that point. Mm-hmm. And so I became vegetarian and kind of dove into food from that angle. And then when I went to college, I went to college my freshman year at Winona State University, and then I transferred to UW La Crosse my sophomore year. And in my sophomore year, I had really wanted to get a job tied to the food system, and I was really interested in working on farms. And I was very fortunate, and I just started asking people at UW La Crosse about this, about how do I work on like a vegetable farm next summer for like an internship. And there's a program back then, kind of in the Wisconsin, Minnesota, Illinois, Iowa region called CRAFT, the Collaborative Regional Alliance for Farmer Training. It doesn't exist anymore, but they connected me with a person that connected me with a bunch of farms, and I went to the Organic Farming Conference in La Crosse for the first time that year, just because I was living in La Crosse, it was really easy to go volunteer, and met a few of the farmers and ended up finding a vegetable CSA to work at that
Great.
Summer.
Great.
But that was just my, so that was kind of like my journey of like being interested in knowing where my food comes from. And what better way to do that than actually work on a farm?
Mm-hmm.
And the farm that I worked on was like the best case scenario. It still exists today. It's called Springdale Farm. It's north of Milwaukee, about an hour north in Plymouth, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And they were the first CSA in Wisconsin, the eighth CSA in the United States.
Wow.
They started in 1988, and I was there. What year was I there? So this would be 2006, summer. I was only there for 2.5 months, but it was a pretty transformative experience. I remember I got there the first night, and the farmers there are Peter Seeley and Bernadette Seeley, and they have 4 children. And I was there when they had a child that was 9 months old, and their oldest was 19, so it was a big spread of ages. And I got there the first night, and I had dinner with them, and I remember Bernadette asking me if I wanted garlic, because I lived in like a little like apartment on the farm,
mm-hmm.
and we had lunch together every day, but we cooked for ourselves other meals. And she asked me if I wanted garlic to cook with. And I was like, I don't even know what to do with that. I said yes, but I had no idea how to cook with garlic.
Now
at the
you
time.
Grow it.
Yeah. And I think it was 20, I turned 21 that summer. But it was just such a fun experience because, like, I was just so interested in learning about how to grow things and also how to cook things that, like, they taught me how to can tons of stuff that summer and like learn how to grow tons of different foods. And they were growing about 15 acres of vegetables at the time and serving about 500 families a week through their CSA programs.
That's a big program.
Yeah, so yeah. It was a bigger vegetable farm. They had been running for a long time, but it was just, there's two other interns. There was a lot of worker shares there. So there was just a lot of different people coming in and off the farm to talk to and learn from. And like, that was my first exposure to wild foraging foods too. And like, my mind was blown as well. Mm-hmm. And so, it was kind of like when you would discover something new that you've never like known anything about, and you just are just like, whoa, there's so much here. And
plus you're just dropped right into
it. Yeah, I was dropped right into it. And so it was just a fantastic experience, and I'm so thankful to the family for just accepting me. And they told me later that they were like, yeah, we were fine with you working, because I've always been a big like road biker and mountain biker, and they were like, we knew you rode your bike a lot so that you could handle being in the field for long hours every day. And I was like, yeah, I didn't know what I was doing, but I learned an incredible amount there. Yeah, and at that point, I was unsure if I wanted to like pursue food stuff or actually pursue doing more politics.
Mm-hmm.
At UW-La Crosse, I was really involved in student government on campus. In my senior year, I was vice president of student government, so I ran all the student senate meetings. Student Government Senate passed a lot of legislation for environmental sustainability on campus that year. And so, yeah.
Did you see that implemented?
Well, the funny thing is I got all these different, like I got the chancellor with a big group of students that were working together in a couple of student organizations. We got the chancellor to sign an international sustainability declaration that led to the formation of like a joint faculty and student committee on sustainability for the campus, which had never happened before. And then we also implemented a student like segregated fee, which is basically students have to pay for all the student paid for buildings on campus, dorms and like the student union and whatnot. And I was seeing, like, I kept on pushing for renewable energy on campus, and they always were like, oh, we don't have money for this. We don't have money for this. And I was like, well, then let's create a way to, like, fund money. And so we created, like, a $5 fee per student a semester that went into this pot to fund sustainability initiatives on campus. And that passed right before I graduated as well. So
very interesting, though.
Yeah, yeah. So I felt bad, actually, because I worked with a lot of these students to push all these initiatives, and they all passed right as I was graduating. Uh-huh. College is such a great microcosm to experiment with different things and learn about different systems. And then when you graduate, you're suddenly just oh, see you later.
Right. And on to the next. Yeah. What will that be?
Yeah, so that was a great experience at UW La Crosse, mm-hmm. learning all about that. And I graduated in 2008, so that was during the recession, and it was incredibly difficult to find a job. And I was pretty unsure what I actually wanted to do. I got a degree in biology, an environmental science concentration, and a minor in chemistry, and I'd worked in analytical chemistry labs working on river studies.
Oh yeah.
During college as well on the side. And I from that experience I was I do not want to work in a lab anymore.
Right. At first we find out a lot of things we don't want to do.
Yeah, yeah. No,
by
but
trying them.
Yeah, yeah. Good. Yeah. I had spent my summers working in a chemistry lab testing, and I was actually testing wild rice for mercury. That's another whole topic. But I was I don't want I liked the resulting research, but
doing
the actual work, I was I don't want to sit in a lab for 12 hours a day that doesn't have windows and
right.
running all these samples with chemicals and yeah.
Yeah.
And so I graduated and I ended up just working on another farm right away. I had a great experience at Springdale Farm, but I wanted to work on a smaller vegetable farm that wasn't 15 acres and mm-hmm. have 50 people mm-hmm. there.
You might have better bike trails.
Yeah. Well, I was very into road biking at that time. Okay. And so I ended up getting a job at this farm doesn't exist anymore, the Good Luck Farm. And it's part of, if you've heard of Anathoth Community Farm, it's up in Luck, Wisconsin. It's a commune up there. So there's probably, when I was there, I think there was close to 10 people that lived on the property. It was 50 acres. There's a couple nonprofits run out of the property. And then there was also this farm. And everyone there practiced vortex resistance. So no one made more than $9,000 a year so that they wouldn't pay federal taxes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it was a great experience. Everyone, I was the youngest person. I had just graduated from college, so I was 23. Uh-huh. And the next youngest person was in their late 30s or something uh-huh. that. So that was a bit of a shock. But it was a good experience, and getting more hands-on and seeing every single crop on the farm kind of mm-hmm. going to market, because it was mainly just the farm operator and I mm-hmm. working to get about 60 CSA boxes a week out mm-hmm. to folks, and then supply restaurants. We were delivering mostly to the Duluth, Minnesota market. Mm-hmm. And I worked there for about 6 months. And then, again, it was the recession at this point, and I just ended up moving back to La Crosse. And it was kind of a really uninspiring time in my life. I was struggling with what I wanted to do with my life, and I worked at People's Food Co-op in the produce department, but I interviewed to be a bus driver, an MTU bus driver. I interviewed to work at City Brewery and their quality assurance lab. I was trying to get a job to work in the butter factory in mm-hmm. Chaseburg Organic Valley. And no one would hire me. I was being too honest and being I just want a job for a year. And everyone just wanted someone that...
Right. Could maybe commit. For
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there was such high unemployment then that it was just... I just needed to not be honest to them to get a job. And so I worked for... I worked at People's Food Co-op for 7 months and saved up some money. And then a friend and I, from a friend that I had made, new friend that I had made at UW La Crosse, Jeremy Gregert, he and I went on a 3-month-long bike tour in the Pacific Northwest that summer. So that was the summer of 2009 mm-hmm. before I moved to Viroqua. And so we just took the train out to Eugene, Oregon, and then rode up all the way to Vancouver, British Columbia, and like stayed at all the big cities. And then I rode all the way back to the Twin Cities.
Wow.
From there.
That's a long way.
Yeah. And then when I got back, I was like, huh, what should I do now? And Jeremy was looking for jobs for me, and he sent me a listing for Vernon County Farm to School AmeriCorps member.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh, that sounds interesting. Like, I've always been interested in education, and like, it'd be great to teach kids about food and where food comes from. And so I just applied for it and got contacted and came to interview. I rode my bike to the interview. And I got interviewed by Marilyn Volden and Monique Hooker.
Oh, right.
So this was fall of 2009. And then after the interview, I rode back to La Crosse. And I checked my email once I got back to La Crosse. And they were like, oh, do you want the job? And I was like, sure, for sure. Right. And then I was like, oh, I'm moving to Viroqua. Mm-hmm. And yeah, at that time, it was, again, it was like, it was hard. It was very difficult to find a job, I feel like, especially being right out of college, that I was passionate about, that that was new and interesting. And I'm very thankful that they were willing to give me a try.
Right. And Monique was so passionate.
Yeah.
Marilyn, too. I mean, the team of them, they did some great work together.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, for folks that are listening that don't know about them, Marilyn, she was the food service director at Viroqua Area Schools around that time. And Monique Hooker, she lived in DeSoto. She was a retired chef and had a restaurant in Chicago and had a cookbook. And she was from Brittany, France. And she had a very fiery personality that always made me smile. But she had worked a lot with Maryland on getting a grant for a farm-to-school AmeriCorps member in the county to start a farm-to-school program in the county. And she also worked with Marilyn on trying to bring more local foods into the cafeteria at the public school, which they were quite successful.
Right, and that was a time when a lot of things were happening around here to start supporting the local farmers, especially the vegetable growers, to be able to build markets, have distribution systems and storage, over winter storage and things like that.
Yeah.
So that a program like working with the school and the direct work with cafes and restaurants could really happen.
Yeah, yeah.
Because otherwise, everyone needed those systems at that time.
Yeah, and it was excellent just to kind of be dropped down here, because Valley Stewardship Network at the time was doing a lot of work. Danny Lind was the produce manager at the food co-op back then, and they had like started up the gleaning program. And I think my first week here, I like went along with them and was like gleaning Brussels sprouts and potatoes from a local farm. And what that program has morphed into is Community Hunger Solutions as well, but that was kind of in its infancy.
It sure planted the idea that volunteers and people could work together with farms and not let that food go to waste, but actually bring it in and find a way to distribute it to people who needed it.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Very important seed idea. Okay, we'll just take a little station break and come back to this, though, because I like that topic of working with the schools and the kids. So you're listening to the Conversations program on WDRT, Viroqua, here in, and you could stream it also at, or you might be already streaming it at WDRT.org. And my name is Mary Christensen. I'm hosting Bjorn Bergman this morning. We're talking a lot. We've been talking about how he got here, but now we're going to start talking about all these other interesting things he got involved with here, which contribute to understanding how we are here now in 2023 with some of the vitality within the food system that we have going here in Viroqua. Okay, so Bjorn, What did you do as an AmeriCorps volunteer?
Yeah, so originally the grant was to have two part-time people, one that was working on food procurement for the cafeteria, and then another one that was working on nutrition education and working with kids in the classroom. And I talked Marilyn and Monique into just hiring me for both of them, so I worked full-time. But yeah, it was, I ended up doing it for 2 years, so from the fall of 2009 until the spring of, or I guess the summer of 2011. And I worked a little bit on the food procurement side of things, but I feel like what was most successful was doing nutrition education lessons in the classroom. And the program, when I was working on it, was intended to cover the whole entire county.
Wow, that would be a lot.
Yeah, yeah. So going to DeSoto School District, going to Lafarge, Hillsborough, Westby, and Viroqua. Viroqua Area Schools was definitely kind of like the foundation. That's where I had an office, and I could use the kitchen there. But it was slow going, though, because I had never taught before, and I was mostly teaching kids like kindergarten through fifth grade, mm-hmm. usually through fourth grade. And I've never been trained in how to teach or anything like that. And so it was definitely a new experience to be plopped in and working with kids. But I loved it. It was always a lot of fun. But I ended up using some different models from around the country. Most farm-to-school programs have a thing called Harvest of the Month, where they just pick one fruit or vegetable from the state that they're in and go into the classroom and teach kids about how it's grown, show them pictures of it growing, and then at the end of the lesson, you do a tasting. So you kind of prepare that. Usually, everyone tries the food completely plain, and then sometimes it's like mixed into a salad or something like that. And it was a fun thing to kind of like set up these lessons each month. And in the beginning, I'd maybe teach like a handful of lessons in the class in classes. But at the end of the 2 years, I was teaching the same lesson in like 46 classes in the county.
Wow,
it was a lot. And it was good. It was very, very repetitive, but I'd go in and just teach like this 20 half-hour lesson of where kids got to learn about, say, like beets or something like that, and then try raw beets and roasted beets and different colored beets. And it seemed, I don't know, to me it seemed really, really successful. I always like ask the kids, well, what were my three rules about tasting? When kids went to go taste something, they couldn't say anything. They needed to keep their mm-hmm. opinions to themselves until I asked them. And number two, they couldn't say yum or yuck. They needed to use their senses to describe what about it they liked or they didn't like. So they need to say, oh, this was bitter, or this, to kind of think more about, rather than just having like that visceral reaction to a food, like, mm-hmm. to actually think about, oh, I don't like this because mm-hmm. of this. And then every kid had to take a polite bite. It was okay if they didn't like something and they didn't have to finish it, but they needed to try it. Mm-hmm. And that, I felt like that was like really, really a successful way to do it. There'd be kids that would be disappointed when they didn't like something I brought in. They were like, Mr. Bergman, I'm so sad that I don't like the beets that you brought in today. I thought I was going to like them a lot, but I don't like them. So I don't know. It's just, and there was a specific lesson that I did. I think in Lafarge, they had asked me to like teach lessons about spinach because they wanted the kids to eat more like leafy greens. And I went into the classroom and just like taught them about spinach. And then I made a salad with like cut up apples and dried cranberries and like balsamic vinaigrette dressing, and I just made the dressing in front of everyone and like assembled the salad. And all the teachers afterward were like, we saw you come in. We were like, the kids are not going to eat that. And every class I went into, the kids would eat all of it, and the teachers would just be dumbfounded.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and then a couple parents, like I went to a volunteer appreciation breakfast at the school, and I sat with some other parents at a table, and I introduced myself, and one parent was like, "You're Mr. Bergman? My kid won't touch leafy greens, and you did a lesson about spinach, and we've eaten that salad for 3 straight meals now. He keeps asking for it."
That's amazing.
Yeah, and so, like, obviously it's not having that impact on every kid, but any time that you have a kid that goes from, like, not wanting to touch new foods or try new foods to being open to it and being excited about it is always a win. And so those 2 years that I did farm to school, that was kind of the foundation of the work that I did, was teaching these Harvest of the Month lessons in the classroom. There was some other work that we were doing that was mostly aimed at the elementary students. Marilyn and Monique had this other idea for a high school cooking competition to try to engage the high schoolers.
Right, tell us about that. Yeah. That was fun.
Yeah, it was called the Harvest Challenge, and the idea was that high school students would be partnered up with a local chef, and they'd be in charge of designing a school lunch that met, like, the dietary needs and the budgetary guidelines of the National School Lunch Program. It was pretty hard to
do, because that budget was only...
Yeah, back then it was only like $1.19 or something for like food costs, which is crazy. But at the same time, like, I understand, like, when we have people in our communities that have free and reduced lunches and whatnot, mm-hmm. we need to keep the food costs low to provide access to everyone. Mm-hmm. And so trying to incorporate local foods into that was really difficult, especially when a lot of cafeterias aren't really set at that time, and still today aren't really set up to process things. They're just used to taking frozen things out of the freezer and
that
eating
them up.
That was
a huge awakening to me.
Yeah.
I could hardly believe it, because during my school years, there was a whole functioning kitchen and many women, elderly usually, mm-hmm. in there making things from scratch.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
a lot of good meals, and some you didn't like, but, mm-hmm. you know, basically to think that now there aren't stoves and ovens and things, even the equipment, if you wanted to bring food.
Yeah, and when I was working, Viroqua did a lot of work to get equipment to actually be able to cook things.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, mind you, it's such a balancing act, because, like, you can have a more expensive meal one day, but then you need to kind of offset that by having a cheaper meal. And so it's not like that black and white thing of, like, this school lunch program has local foods in it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, like, these little steps of, like, integrating different foods. And so the work that, like, Monique did when back then it was called the Fifth Season Program, of, like, in late September they'd make ratatouille and mm-hmm. freeze that, like, 800 pounds of ratatouille. They'd freeze it and have it in the school freezers, and then take it out and add it to pizza throughout the year.
Right.
And then they would grate carrots and zucchini and make muffins out of that local carrots and zucchini as well, the harvest muffins. And so Monique was really, really kind of helping create systems with Marilyn to try to integrate that that food. But yeah, it was interesting, like, suddenly giving this idea of, like, hey kids, like, you don't like the school lunch. Here's the guidelines that the school lunch program has to go by. Design something yourself.
Yeah.
And that's what the Harvest Challenge set out to do. And then once the kids came up with their menu, they had to make, like, 200 servings of it. And then we had, like, an Iron Chef event where we had a celebrity panel of judges. It was usually just, like I know the mayor came, and different business owners would come. And then some of our local politicians would come, and they would be on a judging panel. and the students would have to present their meal to the judges, and then they'd have to try it, and then the judges would vote and who got crowned mm-hmm. as the best school lunch from that year. And then it was also a public event where the public got to come and try all the lunches, and they got to vote as well. Mm-hmm. And so there was a winner crowned for the judges' best lunch and the community choice best lunch. And I feel like it was a really great community engagement event and a way to get... We mainly tried to get students from in the schools around the county to come and participate in the event.
Mm-hmm. I went to them, and they were really fun. And like you say, great community engagement, because all these different schools, I mean, how many times would you get together with that, not only the students, but the parents and their friends? Mm-hmm. You know, and they'd be sitting at a table with people you didn't know and you could get to know, and it was all through this very fun thing, you know, this very fun activity.
Yeah, and for the students, too, like, they got to work directly with different chefs and learn from them. And so I know, like, Luke Zahm was a chef mentor, mm-hmm. And Monique was a chef mentor many of the years for the DeSoto School District. And it was just a great experience for the students. I don't know, just, like, there's... I feel like as a K through 12 student, there's just so many times where you're like, oh, school lunch is so bad. I wish I could do something about it. And suddenly, like, to put the power in their hands. And a lot of the students just, like, afterward, they're like, I really respect the cafeteria workers now. This is hard.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and I remember feeling, I was also surprised by the fact that Marilyn had to put in her order for next year's food meals, for all the meals, all the amounts and everything, like a year early.
Yeah. And that's
like, how could that work and then have local foods?
Yeah.
You have to wonder about the bigger picture too.
Yeah. And that kind of, that gets down a different tangent. We don't mm-hmm. have to go with it very often, but like the National School Lunch Program has all these nutrition guidelines, has essentially budgetary guidelines. And then the other thing that not very many people know about is that there's like USDA commodity foods that school lunch programs have access to at pennies on the dollar. And so this can be cheese, pork, chicken, beef, just like a lot of commodity foods that the USDA will purchase up that are excess to keep prices at a certain amount. And they sell them to kind of community lunch programs or food programs for pennies on the dollar.
Yeah, kind of locks you into the system there.
Yeah, and so it just kind of creates, like, I remember talking to Marilyn and Monique about getting, like, local meat into the school lunch program, and Marilyn was like, I can, like, it's almost, the USDA is almost giving us all the meat for free. Like, how can you not just take advantage of that to, like, lower
okay, but
the
if they
prices.
Are getting that and then they can't cook it, like, how does that work?
Yeah, they usually have processors that process it into different things. So, they will like send their pounds of beef to a processor to make it into burger patties or like taco meat or something like that, and then they'll just like slowly get that throughout the year. It's really kind of a weird program, and at the a few years after I left. Doing the farm to school program at Viroqua, I know that Marilyn took a big jump and she was actually using local beef and had like stepped out of that program for beef at least,
mm-hmm.
Which is a big deal because that like meat can be a very expensive ingredient for, mm-hmm. for lunches. So I was pretty impressed by that, but yeah, it's just such a crazy world to like get into and understand the box you're in. And I believe that the National School Lunch Program has changed a little bit since I did the program. But I'm not super up to date on how mm-hmm. how it works right now. I just remember how crazy, like, seeing all these national programs. And don't get me wrong, it's a great program. It's providing a lot of food to mm-hmm. people that don't have access to food, but mm-hmm. a lot of times the the guidelines are kind of ill-advised.
Right.
And kind of block those relationships of like using local foods and whatnot.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea, blocking the relationship. It's, I mean, that's what you were doing with the grades, with the children, is developing a relationship in a way, like a beat comes from this. And, you know, those stories of children who live in inner cities and don't know where milk comes from, or it's a real thing, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But there's not a relationship to what we eat.
For sure,
for many,
for sure.
Many people.
Yeah, and since we live in an agriculture area, most kids were pretty familiar with where food came from, but a very different experience doing these programs in the inner city.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of other little elements of things that I did in farm to school, but that's kind of the basis of it. And I worked full time for about 2 years doing that work. It was really fulfilling. It really made me excited about teaching and working with other people and educating folks as well.
And during that time, I think there were a lot of school gardens started too, or maybe it was just after that.
Yeah,
but
there was when I came to Viroqua, there was already a teacher that had a pretty vibrant school gardening program, Sue Berg. She's retired now, but she was a fifth grade science teacher, and every spring the kids will learn about science by planting a garden, and then and then every summer the new kids would come, like once a week. The new fifth graders would come once a week and help her weed the garden throughout the summer, and then in the fall they'd have a garden harvest party where they'd make recipes out of garden produce and then serve them to the previous year fifth graders who planted the garden.
Oh, how nice.
Yeah, so she had a really awesome program there. But what's so hard about like gardening programs is you just really need a champion of it. Because it doesn't necessarily, like, yes, you need to have the facility, but you also need to have someone who's passionate about it.
You really do.
That carries it on, or else you can't just say, hey, here's a school garden science teacher.
Right.
I've
been through that.
Just teach your students about it. And if they're not if the teacher's not a gardener or not interested in that, then then it just doesn't, it's extra effort. And, I appreciated Sue.
And there's a real talent that has to be learned and cultivated, and the passion, like you say.
Yeah.
During this conversation, sometimes I'm thinking, I wonder what your mother thought about all this. You know,
my mom was fun. After I became vegetarian, like I talked to her and I was like, oh, I think I'm going to work on a farm this summer. And she was like, what? I think the summer before that, I was like, can I plant the garden with you? And I'm like 19 or 20 at that point. And she was like, sure. You've never been interested in any of this before. But yeah, my mom was excited, but also surprised that I...
Right.
She was also worried, like, I don't know, being vegetarian wasn't a common thing back then. And so...
Mm-hmm.
It was just kind of a big part of my food journey. And my mom and I still connect on gardening. And she does a lot more ornamental stuff, but she still has a vegetable garden. But yeah. I don't know.
And you have big vegetable gardens.
yeah. And like from that experience working on farms, I always have lots of hobbies all the time, but I've always been interested in growing stuff. But I had never actually kept my own garden until I moved to Viroqua. I had always gardened with someone else or worked on a farm where the farmer's like, go weed that, go plant that. I hadn't had to make all the decisions myself. Yeah, the spring of 2010 was the first time that I actually had my own garden and had access to space to garden. And yeah, ever since then, I spend a lot of time every spring, summer, and fall growing stuff and preserving it as well, canning and fermenting and all that good stuff. So it's definitely one of my passions is gardening and food preserving.
Great. Well, we're going to take another station break here. You're listening to the Conversations program. I'm Mary Christensen, hosting Bjorn Bergman this morning. This is WDRT 91.9 on your FM dial and streaming on WDRT.org. So, Bjorn, we've talked about what your work was in the schools, but was it after that then that you went to the co-op and you...
Job market hadn't improved that much at that time because it was summer 2011. And while I was doing AmeriCorps, I was working on the side doing event organizing for Organic Valley as well. I was helping organize part of their Kickapoo Country Fair.
Oh, yeah.
But I thought I was going to need to move to a bigger city to get a job related to food. And I just remember... I was actually living with Sonia Neuenhaus and Cecil Wright those first 4 years that I lived in Viroqua. And after I got done with Farm to School, I kind of just traveled a little bit around the state and visited friends. And I talked to Sonia one day, and she's like, oh, the food co-op's hiring for an outreach coordinator right now. You should look at it. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'll take a look. And I looked at it, and I applied. And then actually got the job that fall of 2011. And so in that job, I was part of the marketing department and more focused on the education and event side of things. Mm-hmm. And I did that job, I always say 9.5 years, but Jan at the co-op has just said, just round up to 10 now. I did that job
really,
for about...
Really, it was that long.
Yeah, okay. So I did that job for about 10 years. And in that job, I organized the product sampling. And then anytime we had an event, if we had a local producer sampling event at the co-op, I was in charge of that. I did writing for the newsletter. Just a lot of... I organized the annual meeting every year for the co-op. But it was a great experience. I knew a little bit about co-ops, but it was a great way to learn kind of about the cooperative business model and how we can best support that. And the co-op, the Viroqua Food Co-op, is one of the big reasons why I actually moved here. I know I had three requirements for the place that I moved, and that was that there was a good food co-op, that I could walk or bike to work. I think those were the two main ones. Mm-hmm. And Viroqua really fit the bill. I don't think I would have moved here and done the farm to school program if Viroqua Food Co-op wasn't in town. And so it was exciting to work for the organization as well. But those 10 years flew by for sure. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think kind of the biggest thing that happened in that time was the co-op expanding from its half the size footprint it is now to double the size. I was there the whole time for that process. I remember when I got interviewed for that job, I remember them talking. It was Jan Rasikas and Charlene Elderkin. They talked about thinking about expanding. Mm-hmm. And, with co-ops, there's so many people involved with them. It's not a quick thing to make a big decision like that. So it took many years, and in 2018 was there when all the craziness happened making the building double the size. I really enjoyed all the work that it was doing at the co-op over the years. It was nice to have a 40-hour-a-week job that kind of really matched my values and was always around food and farmers and trying to tell the story about those farmers. And
And more networking, more and more people getting to know. So that now, weren't you involved with the, the ramp? What is that?
Yeah.
A lot of celebratory kind of events have started around.
Yeah. And so that's another, it's funny you bring up all these little things that I've been involved with. I guess they're not little, but they're just little offshoots of interest.
They're offshoots, but they're what make it interesting and culturally. There's a cultural aspect.
Yeah.
We're building around food.
Yeah, so when I first moved here, I was in the winter. I would help Cecil Wright in his maple forest over near Cashton, and he's involved in Maple Valley Co-op that's based in Cashton, and I would help just repair plastic tubing that they put between the trees to collect sap, and then with tapping and taking taps out. And there was one spring I was out in the woods, like, cleaning things up, and Cecil was like, "Do you know what ramps are?" And I was like, "I have no idea." And he was like, "All those green things in the woods on the forest floor are ramps, which are wild leeks." And we dug some up, and I was like, "This is the best food ever." They're like a little green onion at the bottom, and then like kind of a wider leafy green that's oniony at the top. And I was really excited about them and wanted to share them with other people. And really healthy maple forests are a great habitat for them to thrive in. And that next spring I organized a ramp fest where I just like invited a bunch of friends to come out and camp for the weekend and cook with ramps and learn about wild foods. And the event kind of morphed over the years. For a while, the Driftless Folk School helped me put on the event, which was really great. And then Eric Weniger and Bree Breckel, who run B&E's Trees Farm, they ended up taking the event over when I was kind of like, this is too much for me.
And did they do it on their land then?
Yeah, and they still do a version of it. They do it on their land. The last few years, it's been a mix of a biking event where you it's called the Ramp Romp now.
Right.
And you get together and like do like a 40-mile bike ride and kind of tour the watershed kind of southeast of Cashton.
And what month is that?
On April. It's cold.
It's cold.
There was 1 year that I organized Ramp Fest that it was like 35 and snowing out the Saturday morning I woke up, and there was 1 year it was 70 that weekend. And so it's a crapshoot. But yeah, it was always a fun event. It was definitely stressful towards the end because it started getting bigger and bigger. And there's one or two of them that probably like 150 people came to. And at that point it was slightly overwhelming.
Becomes crowd control.
Yeah. it was always trying to teach people kind of about wild foods and using them respectfully and whatnot. But that was definitely an offshoot of just kind of like one of my little interests that I was like, oh, I want to share this with people. Let's do it right now. But it definitely was fun. And Organic Valley helped me a lot with that event because I had been working on events for them. And so they were very gracious and let me borrow some equipment from their events department to make that a reality and make it cheaper.
Actually, there's a lot of cooperation around here between organizations to make things work.
Yeah.
Which is so nice. I like that.
Yeah, and like with that event, everyone kind of saw that it wasn't about making money. It was about educating folks and just sharing the excitement about spring and wild foraging with people. And wasn't anything people were just like, oh, yeah, of course, you can borrow this from me.
And so now, Bjorn, you're on the co-op board.
Yep, yeah. Huh. So when I left working at the Viroqua Food Co-op, gave it a year break, and then I decided to run for the food co-op board. And so now I'm one of the ownership seven representatives that works with the general manager on the future direction of the co-op. And I'm happy to participate in that way because I think it's just such a great organization. We're so privileged to be able to have such easy access to local food by going to the Viroqua Food Co-op.
It's so amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, recently my sister has moved here, so as I show her around, I'm so proud of some of the things that have been built up here by people.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't gone out to the Food Enterprise Center yet, but I mean, going to the co-op and seeing how many local farmers are supported and local producers in health and beauty and mercantile, and wherever there's a department, if somebody's trying to build up a business around here, there's a place to maybe start.
Yeah, for sure. And that's what new local farmers and businesses need is a lot of different diversified outlets for their products. So,
A way to get to know your community and for them to get to know you, and then all kinds of things. can percolate up. So what you were doing at the co-op, I mean at the farmer's market, was selling your own garlic?
Yeah.
Seed garlic. What other specialty things?
Yeah.
Because if we have this nice little conversation about how it's important for a farmer to get an accurate price or enough value back.
Yeah. And I, like, gosh, if I could just be a farmer all the time, I'd love to do that just because I love the work. I love working hard and working with my body. And I mean, I don't think there's a more, like, honorable profession than, like, growing food for people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. It's something we all eat 3 times a day. We all need food, and to provide that sustenance and nutrition for people is a really, I don't know, is really important. And I've always, like, in the process of working in the local food system, I'm always just like, oh man, farmers work so hard to produce all of this food. I wish they could get paid 3-4 times the amount for it.
Mm-hmm.
But then you're just like, oh, but what about access? What about people having access? And it kind of involves a bigger discussion about, like, how our whole entire food system is set up.
Mm-hmm.
Is how we, like, we're very willing to pay lots of extra money for kind of for specialty goods and non-necessities, but when it comes down to the essentials, we're not willing to pay as much.
Yeah, there's been so much advertising even since I was a kid about,
yeah,
get this, this is cheaper, this is,
yeah,
come here, but, you know.
Yeah, and so, it's so difficult because, like, I feel like every farmer that grows things, I've had the experience of working on farms, of growing food myself. I know how much work it takes, and you'll never, in the way that our food system's designed right now, or not necessarily designed, but how it works, you'll never essentially get a fair price for it. And I don't really know a different way of setting it up, but
probably a mix of things like community gardens too.
Yeah,
there could be some ways to have more access.
Yeah, and I think the CSA model is, at least when I was participating, was a great one because members of the CSA would usually get a lot more food and get it for cheaper. But since the farmer was guaranteed a market when people were signing up early in spring.
Plus, you can do a work share.
Yeah, and you can do a work share and work on the farms. And I think that's one of the best models for lowering the price and increasing access and making sure that the farmer ends up with more of the money at the end of the day than any of the folks that may come in the middle.
Yeah. So we've just got a few minutes left, and I want to make sure we're, you must have thought about what you wanted to say too, and if there's anything more that you want to say. I mean, I know now you're doing grant writing and that that's also to assist farmers in lowering expenses.
Since I've left the co-op, I worked on a startup with some friends focused on seeds, which is another one of my passions, is seed saving, and we don't really have the time for that. But I did that a little bit while I was working at the co-op too. So I worked with SeedLinked for 4 years, and then
let's say that more clearly.
SeedLinked.com. And that's kind of a harder thing to describe, but it's the idea is, like, making it easier for farmers and gardeners to choose varieties that do well
in their region.
And it's kind of a worldwide business. But then I left there and I got the opportunity to write some grants for Organic Valley farmers this past winter. And so mainly I've been writing USDA REAP grants, Renewable Energy for America program grants. And it's all the grants that I've written have been for getting solar panels for farmers or small businesses. And the program is all U.S. wide. I've mainly been writing them for Wisconsin farmers, but it's a great program. Right now, farmers and small business owners can get 50% of a renewable energy system, solar panels, paid for through this program, the grant. And so it's like if an ag producer or a small business has ever been thinking about solar, this is the best time to do it. This is the most incentives we've gotten. And most of the money right now is from the Inflation Recovery Act.
And those are called REAP grants?
Yep. Renewable Energy for America program is what it stands for. But it's USDA REAP. There's a lot of money in the system right now. And yeah, it's a great time to apply. It takes a while to apply, but really great program. But beyond that, like, that's mainly what I've been doing. I'll probably keep grant writing in the future. I'm unsure which, if I'll just keep doing these REAP grants or start doing other grants for food systems or our community or other businesses. Yeah, it's just exciting to step back now. When I first started doing all this work in Viroqua through AmeriCorps, like, that position was made available to me because someone wrote a grant back then to get that program in. And like, the fifth season program was started because mm-hmm. a grant was written to help support that local food work. And so it's exciting to see 14 years later how maybe I can help in a different way.
Right.
That sort of stuff.
Right. Well, this has been really fun talking with you, Bjorn, and just thinking back to just taking this journey with you back into all these activities, because I was really interested in all that too and participated in certain ways. And I look forward really to seeing what the next 5-10 years might bring here. Do you have any thoughts about what you'd like to see happen?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I love seeing younger farmers at the farmers market and selling to the Viroqua Food Co-op. And,
yeah, that's great.
And I'd love to see those younger farmers start farming and keep farming, because
right.
I want to see that be a viable profession for people. But yeah, I think just more local foods, more supporting mm-hmm. local food producers and farmers, I think is always a great thing, and helping those smaller businesses be more profitable mm-hmm. and more.
And being a great environment for the younger people to find their work. And I mean, just like you did, you know, we come here, we don't know what we're going to do, but if the environment and the conditions are right and people cooperate and see your strengths, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For sure.
Okay, well, thank you so much, and hope to see you next year at the farmer's market sometime sooner.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Mary,
you're welcome.
And thanks, everyone, for listening.